All right, so you wanted the deep dive on the Maldives Monetary Authority and their finances in November 2024. Well, we've got the statement right here. It's like their financial fingerprint. So, expert speaker, what's the first thing that kind of jumps out at you?
Well, right away, we see total assets grew a little bit from October to November 2024, from about 26.89 billion rufiah to 26.96 billion. Liabilities and equity also saw a similar little nudge upwards from 25.57 billion to 25.62 billion rufiah.
Okay, so things are looking up a little bit.
Yeah, slightly, slightly.
But what's driving this growth? I'm seeing a pretty big chunk labeled foreign currency financial assets. What is the MMA doing with all that foreign currency?
It's kind of like their rainy day fund, for dealing with the global economy. The Maldives, being an island nation, relies really heavily on imports and tourism. So holding a good amount of foreign currency, especially U.S. dollars and euros, gives them stability. It helps manage the value of the rufiah and ensures they can make those international payments.
So it's like a buffer against the ups and downs of the global financial tides.
Exactly. A big chunk of these foreign currency assets is held as cash and balances with banks, over 7 billion rufiah. But here's where it gets interesting. This amount actually went down from October to November.
Wait, decreased? Why would they be dipping into their reserves? Is that a sign of trouble in paradise?
Not necessarily, not necessarily. Remember that that recent cyclone that hit the Southern Islands? It's possible the MMA had to step in to provide some emergency funding for reconstruction, which could explain some of that decrease in those foreign currency holdings.
Okay, so they're not just sitting on this money, they're actually using it to support the country.
Precisely. And that's just one possibility. There are other reasons why the MMA might adjust those foreign currency holdings, such as, managing the value of the rufiah against other currencies.
Speaking of managing money, I'm noticing a line item called investments and securities for foreign reserve management. Is the MMA playing the stock market with the country's money?
Not quite the stock market, but they are making strategic investments with a portion of those foreign reserves. These securities are usually things like bonds issued by other countries, considered a relatively safe way to generate some returns.
So it's like diversifying their portfolio, just like financial advisors tell us to do with our own savings.
You got it. And we see that these investments actually went up from about 3.27 billion rufiah in October to 3.89 billion in November, suggesting they might be shifting their strategy a little bit, perhaps seeking higher returns or spreading out their risk a bit more.
Interesting. So the MMA is playing a role in that global financial system, not just managing things domestically, but what about their involvement within the Maldives itself? What jumps out at you from that local currency side of things?
Well, the most prominent item there is that investment in government treasury bonds, standing at over 14 billion rufiah. This tells us the MMA is heavily involved in financing those government activities.
So the MMA is essentially lending money to the government by buying these bonds. But hold on, if they're putting so much into government bonds, doesn't that leave them with less money for other things, like those foreign currency reserves we were just talking about?
That's a great question, and it highlights the delicate balancing act that the MMA has to perform. They need to support the government while also maintaining enough reserves to ensure that financial stability. It's kind of like a financial puzzle, isn't it? The MMA has to carefully allocate its resources, weighing the needs of the government against its responsibility to maintain that overall economic stability.
So how does the MMA's involvement in government financing actually affect everyday people in the Maldives?
Well, one way is through their influence on interest rates. Remember how the MMA buys government bonds? That action actually injects money into the financial system.
Okay, so more money in circulation. Wouldn't that make it easier to get loans?
Exactly. And when loans are easier to get, people are more likely to borrow money to buy houses or start businesses or invest in other things, which can boost the economy.
Okay, so the MMA is like a puppet master pulling the strings of the economy behind the scenes.
In a way, yeah. But it's not as simple as as just pumping money into the system. They also have to keep a close eye on inflation.
Right. Too much money chasing too few goods can drive prices up, make everything more expensive.
Exactly. So the MMA has this constant balancing act,
wow,
trying to stimulate that economic activity without letting inflation get out of control.
Right. Okay. So they can influence interest rates. They can control the money supply. What other tools do they have in their arsenal?
Well, they also set reserve requirements for commercial banks.
Okay.
Remember those balances of commercial banks we saw on the statement?
Yeah.
Those balances are a direct result of reserve requirements.
Okay, I'm still a little fuzzy on reserve requirements.
Yeah.
Could you explain that in a way that even I can understand?
Sure. Imagine it's like a safety deposit box that commercial banks have to keep with the MMA.
Okay.
For every rupee a bank receives in deposits, they have to set aside a certain percentage in this safety deposit box, which they can't lend out.
Ah, so it's a way for the MMA to control how much money the banks have available to lend.
Exactly. By raising those reserve requirements,
mm-hmm,
the MMA can effectively reduce the amount of money circulating in the economy.
Okay.
Which can help curb inflation.
Right.
Conversely, lowering those reserve requirements can free up more money for lending.
Yeah.
Potentially stimulating economic growth.
Okay. It's fascinating how these seemingly technical mechanisms have such a real impact on the lives of everyday people. But I have to ask, how do we know the MMA is making the right decisions? Who's holding them accountable?
That's a crucial question. Central bank independence is a complex issue with no easy answers.
Yeah.
Ideally, you want the MMA to be free from political pressure.
Right.
So they can make decisions based on sound economic principles.
Right. You don't want politicians meddling in monetary policy for their own short-term gains.
Exactly. But at the same time, there needs to be some level of accountability to make sure they're acting in the best interests of the Maldivian people.
Right. So who's keeping an eye on the MMA?
In most democracies, central banks are accountable to the government in some way, whether it's through regular reporting requirements or legislative oversight or public audits. Transparency is key.
Makes sense. The more information the public has about the MMA's activities, the better equipped they are to hold them accountable. Speaking of information, this statement of financial position that we've been analyzing is just one piece of the puzzle, right?
Mm.
Where else can we look to get a more complete picture of the MMA's operations?
Excellent point. Well, the statement gives us a snapshot of their financial health at a specific point in time.
Right.
To really understand their thinking and their decision-making process, we need to dig into other publications like their monetary policy statements or their economic reviews.
Okay, so what kind of insights can we glean from those sources?
Well, for example, monetary policy statements often provide clues about the MMA's assessment of the current economic climate. Are they worried about inflation? Do they see signs of slowing growth?
No.
These statements can reveal a lot about their priorities and how they plan to use their tools to steer the economy.
It sounds like we need to become expert decoders of central bank language.
Indeed. And that's where our deep dive gets even more interesting.
Okay.
By carefully examining these additional sources, we can start to piece together a more complete narrative of the MMA's strategy and their vision for the Maldivian economy.
All right. We're back for this final part of our deep dive into the Maldives' monetary authority. We've explored their balance sheet and deciphered their policy tools.
Yeah.
We even learned a little bit of central bank jargon along the way. A
little bit, yeah.
But I'm still curious, what keeps the folks at the MMA up at night?
Right.
What are the biggest challenges they face in keeping the Maldivian economy on an even keel?
Well, imagine you're trying to captain a ship through a storm. You've got, you know, your charts and your compass, but the winds and the currents are constantly changing, right?
Right.
And there are hidden reefs that you need to avoid. That's kind of what it's like for the MMA.
So they're navigating choppy waters.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And right now those waters are particularly turbulent.
Okay.
You've got global inflation. We've got rising interest rates in major economies and geopolitical uncertainties. All of these factors can have a ripple effect on the Maldives, especially a country so dependent on tourism and imports.
So what can they do? How do they even begin to tackle these challenges?
It's all about finding the right balance. On the one hand, they need to keep inflation in check, which might involve raising interest rates or tightening the money supply.
Right.
But if they go too far, they risk stifling economic growth.
Right. The classic dilemma: dampen growth to control inflation or risk rising prices to keep the economy humming. What are some of the specific things they're watching out for?
Well, one key indicator is the exchange rate.
Okay.
A weaker rupiah can make imports more expensive, which feeds into inflation. But it can also make Maldivian exports more competitive and boost tourism, as you alluded to earlier.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they need to find that sweet spot for the rupiah, not too strong, not too weak. What else are they keeping an eye on?
They're also watching things like government spending and debt levels.
Okay.
Remember those government bonds the MMA is buying?
Yeah.
If the government borrows too much, it can put upward pressure on interest rates and crowd out private investment.
So it's not just about the MMA's actions. They also need to coordinate with the government to ensure fiscal responsibility.
Precisely. It's a delicate dance, and it requires clear communication and cooperation between the MMA and the government. And of course, they're also monitoring those global economic trends.
Right.
And assessing how those might impact the Maldives.
It's a lot to juggle.
It is.
So as we wrap up our deep dive here, what's the key takeaway you want our listener to walk away with?
I think the most important thing is to recognize that economics isn't just about numbers on a spreadsheet. It's about people's lives, their livelihoods, their hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
The decisions made by institutions like the M&A have a real impact on everyone in the Maldives.
Right.
And it's crucial that we understand how those decisions are made and what the potential consequences might be.
Well said. It's been a fascinating peeking behind the curtain of the Maldives Monetary Authority. We've learned about their role in managing the economy, the challenges they face, and the tools they use to navigate those challenges. And I think we've all gained a deeper appreciation for the complexity of the financial world.
I hope so.
And the impact it has on our daily lives.
Absolutely. And remember, this is just the beginning of the journey.
Right.
The more we understand about economics and finance, the better equipped we are to make informed decisions.
Right.
Both for ourselves and for our communities.
That's a great point to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of the Maldives Monetary Authority. Until next time, keep exploring.